Chapter 10. Fingers and Thumbs. Artemis Fowl's cell, the Spiro Needle. Artemis was meditating when the first laser stroke cut through the ceiling. He rose from the lotus position, pulled his sweater back on, and arranged some pillows on the floor. Moments later, a square of metal fell to the floor, its impact silenced by the cushions. Holly's face appeared in the hole. Artemis pointed at the pillows. "You anticipated me?" The LEP captain nodded. "Only 13, and already predictable. I presume you used the air conditioner to vacuum the smoke." "Exactly. I think we're getting to know one another too well." Holly reeled a python line from her belt, lowering it into the room. "Make a loop at the bottom with the clamp, and hop aboard. I'll reel you in." Artemis did as he was told, and in seconds he was clambering through the hole. "Do we have Mr. Foley on our side?" he asked. Holly handed Artemis a small cylindrical earpiece. "Ask him yourself." Artemis inserted the miracle of nanotechnology. "Well, Foley, astound me." Below, in Haven City, the Centaur rubbed his hands together. Artemis was the only one who actually understood his lectures. "You're gonna love this, Mud Boy. Not only have I wiped you from the video, not only did I erase the ceiling falling in, but I have created a simulated Artemis." Artemis was intrigued. "A sim? Really? How exactly did you do that?" "Simple, really," said Foley modestly. "I have hundreds of human movies on file. I borrowed Steve McQueen's solitary confinement scene from The Great Escape and altered his clothes." "What about the face?" "I had some digital interrogation footage from your last visit to Haven. I put the two together and voila. Our simulated Artemis can do whatever I tell him, whenever I say. At the moment, the sim is asleep, but in half an hour, I may just instruct him to go to the bathroom." Holly reeled in her python cord. The miracle of modern science. "The LEP pours millions into your department, Foley, and all you can do is send mud boys to the toilet." "You should be nice to me, Holly. I'm doing you a big favour. If Julius knew I was helping you, he'd be extremely angry. Which is exactly why you're doing it." Holly moved quietly to the door, opening it a crack. The corridor was clear and silent, but for the drone of panning cameras and the hum of fluorescent lighting. One section of Holly's visor displayed miniature transparent feeds from Spyro security cameras. There were 6 guards doing the rounds on the floor. Holly closed the door. "Okay, let's get going. We need to reach Spyro before the guards change." Artemis arranged the carpet over the hole in the floor. "Have you located his apartment?" "Directly above us. We need to get up there and scan his retina and thumb." An expression flashed across Artemis's face. "Just for a second." "The scans?" "Yes. The sooner the better." Holly had never seen that look on the human boy's features before. Was it guilt? Could it be? "Is there something you're not telling me?" she demanded. The expression vanished, to be replaced by the customary lack of emotion. "No, Captain Short, nothing. And do you really think now is the time for an interrogation?" Holly wagged a threatening finger. "Artemis, if you mess with me now, in the middle of an operation, I won't forget it." "Don't worry," said Artemis wryly. "I will." Spyro's apartment was 2 floors directly above Artemis's cell. It made sense to reinforce the same block. Unfortunately, John Spyro did not like the idea of anyone spying on him, so there were no cameras in his section of the building. "Typical," muttered Foley. "Power-crazed megalomaniacs never like anyone to see their own dirty secrets." "I think someone's in denial," said Holly, focusing a tight beam from her neutrino at the ceiling. A section of floating ceiling melted like ice in a kettle, revealing the steel above. Molten beads of metal ate into the carpet as the laser sliced through the flooring. When the hole was of sufficient diameter, Holly shut down the beam and popped her helmet camera into the space. Nothing appeared on the screen.
"Switching to infrared."
A rack of suits sprang into focus. They might have been white.
"The wardrobe. We're in the wardrobe." "Perfect," said Foley. "Put him to sleep."
"He is asleep. It's 10 to 5 in the morning."
"Well, make sure he doesn't wake up then."
Holly replaced the camera in its groove. She plucked a silver capsule from her belt and inserted it into the hole. Foley supplied the commentary for Artemis.
The capsule is a sleeper deeper, in case you're wondering.
Gaseous?
No, brainwaves.
Artemis was intrigued. Go on.
Basically, it scans for brainwave patterns, then replicates them. Anyone in the vicinity stays in the state they're in until the capsule dissolves.
No trace?
None. And no after effects. Whatever they're paying me, it isn't enough.
Holly counted off a minute on her visor clock. Okay, he's out. Providing he wasn't awake when the sleeper deeper went in.
Let's go.
Spyro's bedroom was as white as his suits, except for the charred hole in the wardrobe. Holly and Artemis climbed through onto a white shag pile carpet with whitewood slide wardrobes. They stepped through the doors into a room that glowed in the dark. Futuristic furniture, white, of course, white spotlights and white drapes. Holly took a moment to study a painting that dominated one wall.
Oh, give me a break, she said.
The picture was in oils, completely white. There was a brass plaque beneath. It read, Snow Ghost. Spyro lay in the centre of a huge futon, lost in the dunes of its silk sheets. Holly pulled back the covers, rolling him over onto his back. Even in sleep, the man's face was malevolent, as though his dreams were every bit as despicable as his waking thoughts. Nice guy, said Holly, using her thumb to raise Spyro's left eyelid. Her helmet camera scanned the eye, storing the information on chip. It would be a simple matter to project the file onto the vault scanner and fool the security computer. The thumb scan would not be so simple, because the device was a gel scanner. The tiny sensors would be searching for the actual ridges and whirls of Spyro's thumb. A projection would not do. It had to be 3D. Artemis had come up with the idea of using a memory latex bandage, standard issue in any LEP first aid kit, and the same latex used to glue the mic to his throat. All they had to do was wrap Spyro's thumb in a bandage for a moment, and they would have a mould of the digit. Holly spooled a bandage from her belt, tearing off a 15-centimetre strip.
It won't work, said Artemis.
Holly's heart sank.
This was it. The thing that Artemis hadn't told her.
What won't work?
The memory latex.
It won't fool the gel scanner.
Holly climbed off the futon. I don't have time for this, Artemis. We don't have time for this. The memory latex will make a perfect copy, right down to the last molecule. Artemis's eyes were downcast.
A perfect model, true, but in reverse. Like a photo negative.
Ridges where there should be grooves.
Darf it!
Swore Holly. The mud boy was right.
Of course he was. The scanner would read the latex as a completely different thumbprint.
Her cheeks glowed red behind the visor.
You knew this, mud boy. You knew it all along.
Artemis didn't bother denying it.
I'm amazed nobody else spotted it.
So why lie?
Artemis walked round to the far side of the bed, grasping Spyro's left hand.
Because there is no way to fool the gel scanner. It has to see the real thumb.
Holly snorted.
What do you want me to do? Cut it off and take it with us?
Artemis's silence was response enough.
What? You want me to cut off his thumb? Are you insane?
Artemis waited patiently for the outburst to pass.
Listen to me, Captain. It's only a temporary measure. The thumb can be reattached. True?
Holly raised her palms.
Just shut up, Artemis. Just close your mouth.
And I thought you'd changed.
The commander was right. There's no changing human nature.
4 minutes, persisted Artemis. We have 4 minutes to crack the vault and get back. Spyro won't feel a thing.
4 minutes was the textbook healing deadline. After that, there were no guarantees that the thumb would take. The skin would bind, but the muscles and nerve endings could reject. Holly felt as though her helmet was shrinking.
Artemis, I'll stun you, so help me.
Think, Holly, I had no choice but to lie about my plan. Would you have agreed if I had told you earlier?
No, and I'm not agreeing now. Artemis's face glowed as pale as the walls.
You have to, Captain. There's no other way.
Holly waved Artemis aside as though he were a persistent fly and spoke into her helmet mic.
Foley, are you listening to this insanity? It sounds insane, Holly, but if you don't get this technology back, we could lose a whole lot more than a thumb.
I can't believe it. Whose side are you on, Foley?
I don't even want to think about the legal ramifications of this.
The centaur snickered.
Legal ramifications? We're a tad beyond the court systems here, Captain. This is a secret operation. No records and no clearance. If this came out, we'd all be out of a job. A farm here or there isn't going to make any difference.
Holly turned up the climate control in her helmet, directing a blast of cold air at her forehead.
Are you sure we can make it, Artemis?
Artemis ran a few mental calculations.
Yes, I'm sure. And anyway, we have no option but to try.
Holly crossed to the other side of the futon.
Can't believe I'm even considering this.
She lifted Spyro's hand gently. He did not react, not so much as a sleep murmur. Behind his eyelids, Spyro's eyes jittered in REM's sleep. Holly drew her weapon. Of course, in theory, it was perfectly feasible to remove a digit and then magically reattach it. There would be no harm done, and quite possibly the injection of magic would clear up a few of the liver spots in Spyro's hand. But that wasn't the point. This was not how magic was supposed to be used. Artemis was manipulating the people to his own ends once again.
15-centimeter beam, said Foley in her ear. Very high frequency. We need a clean cut. And give him a shot of magic while you're doing it. It might buy you a couple of minutes.
For some reason, Artemis was checking behind Spyro's ears.
Hmm,
he said.
Clever. What?
Hissed Holly.
What now?
Artemis stepped back.
Nothing important. Continue.
A red glow reflected from Holly's visor as a short, concentrated laser beam erupted from the nozzle of her neutrino.
One cut, said Artemis. Clean.
Holly glared at him. Don't, Mudboy, not a word, especially not advice. Artemis backed off. Certain battles were won by retreating. Using her left thumb and forefinger, Holly made a circle around Spyro's thumb. She sent a gentle pulse of magic into the human's hand. In seconds, the skin tightened, lines disappeared, and muscle tone returned.
Filter,
she said into her mic.
X-ray.
The filter dropped, and suddenly everything was transparent, including Spyro's hand. The bones and joints were clearly visible below the skin. They only needed the print, so she would cut between the knuckles. It would be difficult enough reattaching under pressure without adding a complex joint into the equation. Holly took a breath and held it. The sleeper depot would act more effectively than any anesthetic. Spyro would not flinch or even feel the smallest jolt of discomfort. She made the cut, a smooth cut that sealed as it went. Not a drop of blood was spilt. Artemis wrapped the thumb in a handkerchief from Spyro's closet.
Nice work, he said. Let's go. The clock is ticking.
Artemis and Holly climbed back down through the wardrobe to the 85th floor. There was almost a mile and a half of corridor on this floor and six guards patrolling it in pairs at any one time. Their routes were specially planned so that one pair could always have an eyeball sighting of the vault door. The vault corridor was 100 meters long and took 80 seconds to travel. At the end of that 80 seconds, the next pair of guards stepped around the corner. Luckily, two of the guards were seeing things in a different light this particular morning. Foley gave them their cue.
Okay, our boys are approaching their corner.
Are you sure it's them? These gorillas all look the same. Small heads, no necks.
I'm sure. Their targets are showing up bright and clear.
Holly had painted pecs and chips with a stamp generally used by customs and immigration for invisible visas. The stamps glowed orange when viewed through an infrared filter. Holly pushed Artemis out of the door in front of her.
Okay, go, and no sarcastic comments.
There was no need for the warning. Even Artemis Fowl was not inclined to be sarcastic at such a dangerous stage of the operation. He ran down the corridor, straight towards the two mammoth security guards. Their jackets protruded angularly beneath their armpits. Guns, no doubt. Big ones, with lots of bullets.
Are you sure they're mesmerized?
He asked Holly, who was hovering overhead.
Of course.
Their minds are so blank it was like writing with chalk on a board. But I could stun them if you'd prefer.
No,
panted Artemis.
No trace. There must be no trace.
Pex and Chips were closer now, discussing the merits of various fictional characters.
Captain Hook rocks, said Pex. He will kick Barney's purple butt 10 times out of 10.
Chips sighed.
You're missing the whole point of Barney. It's a values thing. Butt kicking is not the issue.
They walked right past Artemis without seeing him. And why would they see him? Holly had mesmerized them not to notice anybody out of the ordinary on this floor unless they were specifically pointed out to them. The outer security booth lay before them. There were approximately 40 seconds left before the next set of guards turned the corner. The unmesmerized said,
"Just over half a minute, Holly. You know what to do."
Holly turned up the thermocoils in her suit, so they were exactly at room temperature. This would fool the lattice of lasers that crisscrossed the vault's entrance. Next, she set her wings to a gentle hover. Any more downdrafts could activate the pressure pad underfoot. She pulled herself forward, finding purchase along the wall where her helmet told her no sensors were hidden. The pressure pad trembled from the air displacement, but not enough to activate the sensor. Artemis watched her progress impatiently.
"Hurry, Holly! 20 seconds!
Holly grunted something unprintable, dragging herself to within touching distance of the floor. "Video file Spyro 3, she said. And her helmet computer ran the footage of John Spyro, punching in the vault door code. She mimicked his actions, and inside the steel door, 6 reinforced pistons retracted, allowing the counterweighted door to swing wide on its hinges. All external alarms were automatically shut off. The secondary door stood firm, 3 red lights burning on its panel. Only 3 barriers left now, the gel pad, the retina scan, and voice activation. This kind of operation was too complicated of a voice command. Foley's computers had been known to misinterpret orders, even though the Centaur insisted it was fairy error. Holly ripped back the Velcro strap covering the helmet command pad on her wrist. First, she projected a 3D image of Spyro's eyeball to a height of 5'6". The retina scanner sent out a revolving beam to read the virtual eyeball. Apparently satisfied, it disabled the first lock. A red light switched to green. The next step was to call up the appropriate soundwave file to trick the voice check. The equipment was very sophisticated and could not be fooled by a recording. A human recording, that is. Foley's digital mics made copies that were indistinguishable from the real thing. Even stinkworms, whose entire bodies were covered with ears, could be attracted by a worm-mating hiss from Foley's recording equipment. He was currently in negotiation with a bug collection agency for the rights. Holly played the file through her helmet speakers.
"John Spyro, I am the boss, so open up quick."
Alarm number 2 disengaged. Another green light.
"Excuse me, Captain," said Artemis, an undercurrent of apprehension creeping into his voice. "We're almost out of time."
He unwrapped the thumb and stepped past Holly onto the red floor plate. Artemis pressed the thumb into the scanner. Green gel oozed into the severed digit's whorls. The alarm display flashed green. It had worked. Well, of course it had. The thumb was genuine, after all. But nothing happened. The door did not open. Holly punched Artemis in the shoulder.
"Well, are we in?"
"Apparently not. The punching is not helping my concentration, by the way." Artemis glared at the console. What had he missed? "Think, boy, think. Put those famed brain cells to work." He leaned closer to the secondary door, shifting his weight from his back leg. Beneath him, the red dot squeaked.
"Oh, of course,"
exclaimed Artemis. He grabbed Holly, hugging her close.
"It's not just a red marker," he explained hurriedly. "It's weight sensitive."
Artemis was right. Their combined mass was close enough to Spyro's own to hoodwink the scales. Obviously a mechanical device. A computer would never have been fooled. The secondary door slid into its groove below their feet. Artemis handed Holly the thumb.
"Go," he said. "Spyro's time is running out. I'm right behind you."
Holly took the thumb.
"And if you're not, then we got a plan B."
Holly nodded slowly.
"Let's hope we don't have to. Let's hope."
Artemis strode into the vault. He ignored the fortune in jewels and bearer bonds, heading straight for the cube's Perspex prison. There were 2 bullish security guards blocking the way. Both men had oxygen masks strapped over their faces and were unnaturally still.
"Excuse me, gentlemen. Would either of you mind if I borrowed Mr. Spyro's cube?"
Neither man responded. Not so much as a flicker of an eyebrow. This was undoubtedly because of the paralytic gas in their oxygen tanks, concocted from the venom of a nest of Peruvian spiders. The gas was similar in chemical makeup to a salve used by South American natives as an anesthetic. Artemis keyed in the code, which Foley was reciting in his ear, and the 4 sides of the Perspex box descended into the column on silent motors, leaving the C-cube unprotected. He reached out a hand for the box. Spyro's bedroom. Holly climbed through the wardrobe into Spyro's bedroom. The industrialist lay in the same position she had left him, his breathing regular and normal. The stopwatch on Holly's visor read 4:57 a.m. and counting. Just in time. Holly unwrapped the thumb gingerly, aligning it with the rest of the digit. Spyro's hand felt cold and unhealthy to her touch. She used the magnification filter in her visor to zoom in on the severed thumb. As close as she could figure, the two halves were lined up.
"Heal," she said, and the magical sparks erupted from the tips of her fingers, sinking into the two halves of Spyro's thumb. Threads of blue light stitched the dermis and epidermis together, fresh skin breaking through the old to conceal the cut. The thumb began to vibrate and bubble. Steam vented from the pores, forming a mist around Spyro's hand. His arm shook, the shock travelling across his bony chest. Spyro's back arched until Holly thought it would snap. Then the industrialist collapsed back onto the bed. Throughout the entire process, his heart never skipped a beat. A few stray sparks skipped along Spyro's body, like stones on a pond, targeting the areas behind both ears, exactly where Artemis had been looking earlier. Curious? Holly pulled back one ear to reveal a crescent-shaped scar, rapidly being erased by the magic. There was a matching scar behind the other ear. Holly used her visor to zoom in on one of the scars. "Foley, what do you make of these?"
"Surgery," replied the centaur. "Maybe our friend Spyro got himself a facelift, or maybe
it's not Spyro," completed Holly, switching to Artemis's channel.
"Artemis, it's not Spyro, it's a double. Do you hear me? Respond, Artemis."
Artemis didn't reply. Maybe because he wouldn't. Maybe because he couldn't. The vault. Artemis reached out a hand for the box, and a false wall hissed back pneumatically. Behind it stood John Spyro and Arno Blunt. Spyro's smile was so wide he could have swallowed a slice of watermelon. He clapped his hands, jewellery jangling.
"Bravo, Master Fowl. Some of us didn't think you'd make it this far."
Blunt took a $100 bill from his wallet and handed it to Spyro.
"Thank you very much, Arno. I hope this teaches you not to bet against the house."
Artemis nodded thoughtfully.
"In the bedroom, that was a double."
"Yes, Costa, my cousin. We got the same shape head, one or two cuts. We could be peas in a pod."
"So you set the gel scanner to accept his print?"
"For one night only. I wanted to see how far you'd get." "You're an amazing kid, Artie. No one ever made it into the vault before, and you'd be amazed how many professionals have tried. There are obviously a few glitches in my system, something the security people will have to look at. How did you get in here, anyway? You don't appear to have Costa with you."
"Trade secret."
Spyro stepped down from a low platform.
"No matter, we'll review the tapes. There are bound to be a couple of cameras you couldn't rig. One thing is for sure, you didn't do it without help. Check for an earpiece, Arno."
It took Blunt less than 5 seconds to find the earpiece. He plucked it out triumphantly, crushing the tiny cylinder beneath his boot. Spyro sighed.
"I have no doubt, Arno, that that little electronic wonder was worth more than you'll make in a lifetime. I don't know why I keep you around. I really don't."
Blunt grimaced. This set of teeth were perspex, half filled with blue oil, a macabre wave machine.
"Sorry, Mr. Spyro." "You'll be sorrier still, my dently challenged friend," said Artemis, "because Butler is coming."
Blunt took an involuntary step backwards.
"Don't think that mumbo-jumbo is scaring me. Butler is dead. I saw him go down."
"Go down, perhaps. But did you see him die? If I remember the sequence of events correctly, after you shot Butler, he shot you."
Blunt touched the sutures on his temple.
"A lucky shot."
"Lucky? Butler is a proud marksman. I wouldn't say that to his face."
Spyro laughed delightedly.
"This kid is messing with you, Arno. 13 years old and he's playing you like a grand piano in Carnegie Hall. Get yourself a spine, man. You're supposed to be a professional."
Blunt tried to pull himself together, but the ghost of Butler haunted his features.
Spyro plucked the C-cube from its cushion.
"This is fun, Artie. All this tough talk and repartee. But it doesn't mean anything. I win again. You've been outflanked. This has all been a game to me. Amusement. Your little operation has been most educational, if pathetic. But you gotta realize that it's over now. You're on your own. And I don't have time for any more games. Artemis sighed, the picture of defeat.
All of this has been a lesson, hasn't it? Just to show me who's boss.
Exactly. It takes some people a while to learn. I find the smarter the enemy, the bigger the ego. You had to realize that you were no match for me before you would do what I asked.
Spyro placed a bony hand on the Irish boy's shoulder. Artemis could feel the weight of his jewelry.
Now listen carefully, kid. I want you to unlock this cube. No more blarney. I never met a computer nerd yet who didn't leave himself a back door. You open this baby up now, or I'm going to stop being amused, and believe me, you don't want that.
Artemis took the red cube in both hands, staring at its flat screen. This was the delicate phase of his plan. Spyro had to believe that once again he had outmaneuvered Artemis Fowl.
Do it, Artie! Do it now!
Artemis ran a hand across his dry lips.
Very well. I need a minute.
Spyro patted his shoulder.
I'm a generous man. Take two.
He nodded at Blunt.
Stay close, Arno. I don't want our little friend setting any more booby traps.
Artemis sat at the stainless steel table, exposing the cube's inner workings. He quickly manipulated a complicated bunch of fiber optics, removing one strand altogether, the LEP blocker. After less than a minute, he resealed the cube. Spyro's eyes were wide with anticipation, and dreams of unlimited wealth danced in his brain.
Good news, Artie. I want good news only.
Artemis was more subdued now, as if the reality of his situation had finally eaten through his cockiness.
I rebooted it. It's working. Except...
Spyro waved his hands. Bracelets tingled like cat bells.
Except... This better be an itty-bitty except kind of thing.
It's nothing, hardly worth mentioning. I had to revert to version 1. Version 1.2 was coded strictly to my voice patterns. 1 is less secure, if a bit more temperamental.
Temperamental? You're a box, not my grandmother, Cube.
I am not a box, said Foley,
the Cube's new voice, thanks to the removed blocker.
I am a marvel of artificial intelligence. I live, therefore I learn.
See what I mean? Said Artemis weakly. The centaur was beginning to blow it. Spyro's suspicions must not be aroused at this stage. Spyro glared at the cube as though it were an underling.
Are you going to give me attitude, mister?
The cube did not reply.
You have to address it by name, explained Artemis. Otherwise it would answer every question within hearing distance of its sensors.
And what is its name?
Juliet often used the term, duh. Artemis would not use such colloquialisms himself, but it would be apt at this particular moment.
Its name is Cube.
Okay, Cube, are you going to give me attitude?
I will give you whatever it is in my processor's capacity to give.
Spyro rubbed his palms with childish glee, jewelry flashing like ripples in a sunset sea.
Okay, let's try this baby out. Cube, can you tell me, are there any satellites monitoring the building?
Foley was silent for a moment. Artemis could imagine him calling up his sat-track information on a screen.
Just one, at the moment, though, judging from the ion trails, this building has been hit with more rays than the Millennium Falcon.
Spyro shot Artemis a glance.
His personality chip is faulty, explained the boy.
That's why I discontinued him. It.
We can fix that at any time.
Spyro nodded. He didn't want his very own technological genie growing the personality of a gorilla.
What about that group, the LEP, Cube?
He asked.
They were monitoring me in London. Are they watching?
The LEP? That's a Lebanese satellite TV network, said Foley, following Artemis' instructions.
Game shows, mostly. Their footprint doesn't reach this far.
Okay, forget about them, Cube. I need to know that satellite's serial number.
Foley consulted a screen.
Let me see. US, registered to the federal government, number ST1147P.
Spyro clenched both fists.
Yes! Correct! I happen to already have that information myself. Cube, you have passed my test.
The billionaire danced around the laboratory, reduced to childish displays by his greed.
I'm telling you, Artie, this has taken years off me. I feel like putting on a tuxedo and going to the prom.
indeed. I don't know where to start. Should I make my own money, or should I rip off somebody else's?
Artemis forced a smile. The world is your oyster. Spyro patted the cube gently.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is, and I'm going to take every pearl it has to offer.
Pex and Chips arrived at the vault door, guns drawn.
Mr. Spyro, stammered Pex. Is this some kind of drill?
Spyro laughed.
Oh, look, here come the cavalry. An eternity too late. No, this is not a drill. And I would dearly love to know how little Artemis here got past you two.
The hired muscle stared at Artemis as though he had just appeared from nowhere, which, for their mesmerized brains, he had.
We don't know, Mr. Spyro. We never saw him. Do you want us to take him outside for a little accident?
Spyro laughed, a short, nasty bark.
I got a new word for you two dumbbells. Expendable. You are, and he isn't. Just yet. Get it? So just stand there and look dangerous. Otherwise, I may replace you with two shaved gorillas.
Spyro gazed into the cube's screen, as though there were nobody else in the room.
I reckon I got 20 years left in me. After that, the world can go to hell as far as I'm concerned. I don't have any family, no heirs. There's no need to build for the future. I'm going to suck this planet dry. And with this cube, I can do whatever I want to whoever I want.
I know the first thing I'd do,
said Pex. His eyes seemed surprised that the words were coming out of his mouth. Spyro froze. He wasn't used to being interrupted in mid-rant.
What would you do, dumbbell? He said. Buy yourself a boo that Merv's ribbon roast?
No, said Pex. I'd stick it to those phonetics guys. They've been rubbing Spyro's Industries' nose in it for years.
It was an electric moment. Not only because Pex had actually had an idea, but because it was actually a good one. The notion lit a thoughtful spark in Spyro's eyes.
Phonetics. My biggest competitors. I hate those guys. Nothing would give me greater satisfaction than to destroy that bunch of second-rate phone freaks. But how?
Now it was Chips's turn.
I hear they're working on a new top-secret communicator. Superlife battery or something.
Spyro did a double take. First Pex, now Chips. Next thing you knew, they'd be learning to read. Nevertheless.
Cube, said Spyro. I want you to access the Phonetics database. Copy the schematics for all their projects in development.
No can do, boss man. Phonetics are operating on a closed system. No internet connection whatsoever in their R&D department. I have to be on site.
Spyro's euphoria disappeared. He rounded on Artemis.
What is he talking about?
Artemis coughed, clearing his throat. The cube cannot scan a closed system unless the omni-sensor is actually touching the computer, or at least close by. Phonetics are so paranoid about hackers that their research and development lab is completely contained, buried under several floors of solid rock. They don't even have email. I know because I've tried to hack it myself a few times.
But the cube scanned the satellite, didn't it?
The satellite is broadcasting. And if it's broadcasting, the cube can trace it. Spyro toyed with the links of his ID chain.
So, I'd have to go to Phonetics.
I wouldn't recommend it, said Artemis. It's a lot to risk for the sake of a personal vendetta. Blunt stepped forward.
Let me go, Mr. Spyro. I get those plans.
Spyro chewed on a handful of vitamin supplements from a dispenser on his belt.
Nice idea, Arno. Good work. But I am reluctant to hand control of the cube over to anyone else. Who knows what temptation they might yield to.
Cube? Can you disable the Phonetics alarm system?
Can a dwarf blow a hole in his pants? What was that?
Nothing. Technical term. You wouldn't understand it. I have already disabled the Phonetics system.
What about the guards, Cube? Can you disable them?
No problemo. I could remote activate the internal security measure.
Which is?
Tanks of vapor inside the air vents. Sleeping gas. Illegal, by the way, according to Chicago state law, but clever. No after effects. Untraceable. The intruder comes to in lockup 2 hours later.
Spyro cackled.
Those paranoid Phonetics boys. Go ahead, Cube. Knock 'em out.
Night-night,
said Foley, with a glee that seemed all too real. Good. Now, Cube, all that stands between us and the Phonetics blueprints is an encrypted computer.
Don't make me laugh. They haven't invented a unit of time short enough to measure how long it will take me to crack the Phonetics hard disk.
Spyro clipped the cube onto his belt.
You know something? I'm starting to like this guy.
Artemis made one last sincere-sounding attempt to contain the situation.
Mr. Spyro, I really don't think that this is a good idea.
Of course you don't,
laughed John Spyro, jangling towards the door.
That's why I'm bringing you along.
Phonetics Research and Development Laboratories, Chicago's industrial sector. Spyro selected a Lincoln Town Car from his extensive garage. It was a 90s model, with fake registration. He often used it as a getaway vehicle. It was old enough to be unremarkable, and even if the police did get a shot at the plates, it wouldn't lead them anywhere. Blunt parked opposite the Phonetics R&D lab's main entrance. A security guard was visible at his desk behind the glass revolving door. Arno pulled a pair of fold-up binoculars from the glove compartment. He focused on the guard.
Sleeping like a baby, he announced.
Spyro clapped him on the shoulder.
Good. We have less than 2 hours. Can we do it?
If the cube is as good as he says he is, then we can be in and out in 15 minutes.
It's a machine, said Artemis coldly. Not one of your steroid-munching associates. Blunt glanced over his shoulder. Artemis sat in the back seat, squashed between Pex and Chips.
You're very brave all of a sudden.
Artemis shrugged. What have I got to lose? After all, things can hardly get worse. There was a normal door beside the revolving one. The cube remote-activated the buzzer, admitting the band of intruders to the lobby. No alarms sounded, and no platoon of security guards came rushing to detain them. Spyro strode down the corridor, emboldened by his newfound technological friend, and the thought of finally putting Phonetics out of business. The security lift put up no more resistance to the cube than a picket fence would to a tank, and soon Spyro and co. were riding the 8 floors down to the sunken laboratory.
We're going underground, chortled Pex, down where the dinosaur bones are. Did you know that after 1,000,000,000 years, dinosaur dung turns into diamonds?
Usually a comment like that would have been a shooting offence, but Spyro was in a good mood.
No, I didn't know that, Pex. Maybe I should pay your wages in dung.
Pex decided that it'd be better for his finances if he just kept his mouth shut from then on. The lab itself was protected by a thumbprint scanner, not even gel. It was a simple matter for the cube to scan the fingerprint on the plate, then project it back onto the sensor. There wasn't even a key code backup.
Easy, crowed Spyro. I should have done this years ago.
A little credit would be nice, said Foley, unable to hide his pique. After all, I did get us in here and disable the guards. Spyro held the box before him.
Not crushing you into scrap metal, Cube, is my way of saying thank you.
You're welcome,
grumbled Foley. Arno Blunt checked the security monitor bank. Throughout the facility, guards lay unconscious, one with half a rye sandwich stuffed in his mouth.
I gotta admit it, Mr. Spyro. This is beautiful. Phonetics are even going to have to foot the bill for the sleeping guests.
Spyro glanced towards the ceiling. Several camera lights winked red in the shadows.
Cube, are we going to have to raid the video room on our way out?
It ain't going to happen, said Foley, the method actor. I wiped your patterns from the video.
Artemis was suspended by the armpits between Pex and Chips.
Traitor, he muttered. I gave you life, Cube. I am your creator.
Yeah, well, maybe you made me too much like you, Fal. Aurea est potestas. Gold is power. I'm just doing what you taught me.
Spyro patted the cube fondly.
I love this guy. He's like the brother I never had.
I thought you had a brother, said Chips, puzzled,
which was not unusual for him.
Okay, said Spyro. He's like a brother I actually like.
The Phonetics server was located in the center of the lab, a monolithic hard drive with Python-like cables rippling out to various workstations. Spyro unclipped his new best friend from his belt.
Where do you need to be, Cube?
Just pop me down on the lid of the server and my omnisensor will do the rest.
Spyro complied, and in seconds, schematics were flickering across the C-Cube's tiny screen.
I have them, crowed Spyro,
his hands 2 fists of triumph.
That's the last snide email with stock prices I get from these guys.
Download, complete, said Foley smugly. We have every phonetics project for the next decade.
Spyro cradled the cube against his chest.
Beautiful. I can launch our version of the phonetics phone before they do. Make myself a few extra million before I release the cube.
Arno's attention was focused on the security monitors.
Hey, Mr. Spyro, I think we have a situation here.
A situation? Growled Spyro. What does that mean? You're not a soldier anymore, Blunt. Speak English.
The New Zealander tapped a screen as if that would change what he was seeing.
I mean, we have a problem. A big problem.
Spyro grabbed Artemis by the shoulders.
What have you done, Fowl? Is this some kind of...
The accusation died before it could be completed. Spyro had noticed something.
Your eyes. What's wrong with your eyes? They don't match.
Artemis treated him to his best vampire smile.
All the better to see you with, Spyro.
In the phonetics lobby, the sleeping security guard suddenly regained her senses. It was Juliet. She peeped out from under the brim of a borrowed cap to make sure Spyro had not left anyone in the corridor. Following Artemis's capture in Spyro's vault, Holly had flown them both to phonetics to initiate Plan B. Of course, there had been no sleeping gas. For that matter, there had only been two guards. One was taking a restroom break, and the other was doing the rounds of the upper floors. Still, Spyro wasn't to know that. He was busy watching Foley's family of sim securities snoring all over the building, thanks to a video clip on the phonetic system. Juliet lifted the desk phone and dialed three numbers. 9-1-1. Spyro reached two fingers delicately into Artemis's eye, plucking out the iris cam. He studied it closely, noting the microcircuitry on the concave side.
This is electronic, he whispered. Amazing. What is it?
Artemis blinked a tear from his eye.
It's nothing. It was never here, just as I was never here.
Spyro's face twisted in sheer hatred.
You were here all right, Fowl, and you'll never leave here.
Blunt tapped his employer on the shoulder, an act of unforgivable familiarity.
Boss, Mr. Spyro, you really need to see this.
Juliet stripped off her phonetic security jacket. Underneath, she wore a Chicago PD SWAT uniform. Things could get hairy in the R&D lab, and it was her job to make sure that Artemis did not get hurt. She hid behind a pillar in the lobby and waited for the sirens. Spyro stared at the lab security monitors. The pictures had changed. There were no more guards slumbering around the facility. Instead, the screens played a tape of Spyro and his cronies breaking into phonetics, with one crucial difference. There was no trace of Artemis on the screen.
What's happening, Cube?
Spluttered Spyro.
You said that we'd all be wiped from the tapes.
I lied. It must be the criminal personality I'm developing.
Spyro smashed the cube against the floor. It remained intact.
Tough polymer,
said Artemis, picking up the microcomputer.
Almost unbreakable.
Unlike you, retorted Spyro.
Artemis looked like a doll pinned between pecs and chips.
Don't you understand yet? You're all on tape. The cube was working for me.
Big deal. So we're on tape. All I have to do is pay the security booth a visit and take the recordings.
It's not going to be that simple.
Spyro still believed that there was a way out.
And why not? Who's going to stop me, little old you?
Artemis pointed to the screens.
No, little old them.
The Chicago PD brought everything they had and a few things they had to borrow. Phonetics was the city's biggest single employer, not to mention one of the top five subscribers to the Police Benevolent Fund. When the 911 call came in, the duty sergeant put out a citywide summons. In less than 5 minutes, there were 20 uniforms and a full SWAT team beating on the phonetics doors. Two choppers hovered overhead, and 8 snipers lined the roofs of the adjacent buildings. No one was leaving the area, unless they were invisible. The phonetic security guard returned from his rounds and had just noticed the intruders on the monitors. Shortly after that, he noticed a group of Chicago PD uniforms tapping the door with their gun barrels. He buzzed them in.
I was about to call you guys, he said. There's a bunch of intruders in the vault. They must have tunneled in or something, because they didn't come past me.
The security guard on a restroom break was even more surprised. He was just finishing off the sports section of the Herald Tribune when two very serious-looking men in body armour burst into the cubicle.
ID!
Growled one, who apparently did not have the time for full sentences. The security guard held up his laminated card with a shaking hand.
Stay put, sir,
advised the other police officer. He didn't have to say it twice. Juliet slipped out from behind the pillar, joining the ranks of the SWAT team. She pointed her gun and roared with the best of them, and was instantly assimilated into the group. Their assault was cut short by a tiny problem. There was only one access point to the lab, the lift shaft. Two officers pried open the lift door with crowbars.
Here's our dilemma, said one. We cut the power, then we can't get the lift up here. If we call the lift up here first, then we tip off our intruders.
Juliet shouldered herself to the front of the group.
Excuse me, sir. Let me go down on the cables. I blow the doors and you cut the power.
The commander didn't even consider it.
No, too dangerous. The intruders would have plenty of time to put 100 rounds into the lift.
Who are you, anyway?
Juliet took a small gripper from her belt. She clipped it onto the lift cable and hopped onto the shaft.
I'm new,
she said, disappearing into the blackness. In the laboratory, Spyro and co. were hypnotized by the monitors. Foley had allowed the screens to show what was actually happening on the upper levels.
SWAT, said Blunt. Helicopters? Heavy armament? How did this happen?
Spyro smacked his own forehead repeatedly.
A setup! This entire thing! A setup! I suppose Mo Digens is working for you, too?
Yes.
Pex and Chips, too, even if they didn't know it.
You would never have come here if I suggested it.
But how? How did you do this? It's not possible!
Artemis glanced at the monitors. Well, obviously it is.
I knew you'd be waiting for me in the Spyro Needle Vault. After that, all I had to do was use your own hatred of phonetics to lure you here, out of your environment.
If I go down, so do you.
Incorrect. I was never here. The tapes'll prove it.
But you are here,
roared Spyro, his nerves shot. His whole body vibrated and spittle sprayed from his lips in a wide arc.
Your dead body will prove it. Give me the gun, Arno. I'm going to shoot him.
Blunt could not hide his disappointment, but he did as he was told. Spyro pointed the weapon with shaky hands. Pex and Chips stepped rapidly to one side. The boss was not known for his marksmanship.
You have taken everything from me,
he shouted.
Everything!
Artemis was strangely calm.
You don't understand, John. It's like I told you. I was never here.
He paused for breath.
And one more thing. About my name. Artemis.
You are right, in London. It is generally a female name, after the Greek goddess of archery. But every now and then, a male comes along with such a talent for hunting that he earns the right to use the name. I am that male. Artemis the Hunter. I hunted you. And just like that, he disappeared. Holly had been hiding in the phonetics laboratory waiting for Spyro and co. to show up. She had got permission to enter when she'd tagged along with Juliet on a public tour of the facility earlier that afternoon. Juliet had put on her best cutesy voice for the tour guide.
Hey, mister, is it okay if I bring my invisible friend?
Sure it is, honey, replied the guide, whose name tag read Rosa. Bring your security blanket too if it makes you happy.
They were in. Of course, the tour didn't extend to the R&D lab, but Holly had no problem jimmying the lift controls with her Omni-tool. She hovered at ceiling level after close of business, following Artemis's progress on the iris cam. The Mud Boy's plan was fraught with risk. If Spyro decided to leave him in the needle, then it was all over. But no, just as Artemis predicted, Spyro had opted to gloat for as long as possible, basking in the glow of his own demented genius. But of course, it wasn't his own genius. It was Artemis's. The boy had orchestrated this whole operation from beginning to end. It had even been his idea to mesmerize Pex and Chips. It was crucial that they plant the idea to invade phonetics. Holly was ready when the lift door opened. She had her weapon charged and targets selected. But she couldn't go. Wait for the signal. Artemis dragged it out, melodramatic, to the end. And then, just when Holly was about to disregard her orders and start blasting, he spoke. I am that male. Artemis the Hunter. I hunted you. Artemis the Hunter. The signal.
Holly squeezed the manual throttle on her wing rig, descending to an altitude of 3 feet. She clipped Artemis onto a retractable cord on her moon belt, then dropped a sheet of cam foil in front of him. To everybody in the room, it would seem as though the boy had disappeared. "Up we go," she said, though Artemis could not hear her, and opened the throttle wide. In under a second, they were nestled safely among the cables and ducts that ran along the ceiling. Below them, John Spyro lost his mind. Spyro blinked. The boy had gone. Just gone. It couldn't be. He was John Spyro. Nobody outsmarted John Spyro. He turned to Pex and Chips, gesticulating wildly with the gun. "Where is he?" Said the bodyguards in perfect unison, unrehearsed. "Where is Artemis Fowl? What did you do with him?"
Nothing, Mr. Spyro. We was just standing here playing the shoulder game.
"Fowl said you were working for him, so hand him over." Pex's brain was churning. This was an operation akin to a food blender mixing concrete.
Careful, Mr. Spyro. Guns are dangerous, especially at the end with the hole.
"This isn't over, Artemis Fowl," Spyro roared at the ceiling. "I will find you. I will never give up. You've got John Spyro's word on it. My word." He began to fire random shots, blowing holes in monitors, vents, and conduits. One even came within a meter of Artemis. Pex and Chips were not quite sure what was going on, but decided that it might be a good idea to join in the fun. They pulled out their weapons and began shooting up the lab. Blunt did not get involved. He considered his employment contract terminated. There was no way out of this for Spyro. It was every man for himself. He crossed to the wall's metal panelling and began to dismantle it with a power screwdriver. A section dropped from its casing. Behind it, a 5-centimetre cable space, then solid concrete. They were trapped. Behind him, the lift door dinged. Juliet was crouched in the lift shaft. "We're clear," said Holly in her earpiece. "But Spyro's shooting up the lab." Juliet frowned. Her principal was in danger. "Knock them out with a neutrino." "I can't. If Spyro is unconscious when the police arrive, he could claim a frame-up." "Okay, I'm going in." "Negative. Wait for SWAT." "No, you take out the weapons. I'll handle the rest." Mulch had given Juliet a bottle of dwarf rock polish. She poured a little puddle on the lift roof, and it dissolved like fat on a pan. Juliet hopped into the carriage, crouching low in case Blunt decided to put a few rounds into the lift. "On three. Juliet, I'm going on three." "Okay." Juliet reached up to the door open button. "One." Holly drew her neutrino, locking all 4 targets into her visor's targeting system. "Two." She unshielded for accuracy. The vibration would throw her aim right off. For a few seconds, she would have to hide behind the foil with Artemis. "Three." Juliet pressed the button. Holly squeezed off 4 shots. Artemis had less than a minute to make his move, less than a minute, while Holly targeted and disarmed Spyro and co. The circumstances were hardly ideal, screaming, gunfire and general mayhem. But then again, what better time to implement the final step in this stage of the plan? A very vital step. The second Holly unshielded to fire, Artemis scrolled out a Perspex keyboard from the C-Cube's base and began to type. In seconds, he hacked into Spyro's bank accounts, all 37 of them, in institutions from the Isle of Man to the Caymans. The various account numbers locked into place. He had access to each secret fund. The cube quickly ran a tot on the total funds, $2.8 billion, not counting the contents of various safety deposit boxes, which could not be touched over the net. $2.8 billion. Plenty to restore the Fowl status as one of the top 5 richest Irish families. Just as he was about to complete the transaction, Artemis remembered his father's words. His father returned to him by the fairy folk.
"And what about you, Artie? Will you make the journey with me? When the moment comes, will you take your chance to be a hero?"
Did he really need billions of dollars?
"Of course I need it. Aurea est potestas. Gold is power."
"Really?
Will you take your chance to be a hero, to make a difference?"
Because he could not groan aloud, Artemis rolled his eyes and gritted his teeth. Well, if he was going to be a hero, he would be a well-paid one. He quickly deducted a 10% finder's fee from the $2.8 billion, then sent the rest to Amnesty International. He made the transaction irreversible, in case he weakened later on. Artemis wasn't finished yet. There was one more good deed to be attended to. The success of this venture depended on Foley being too busy watching the show to notice Artemis hacking into his system. He brought up the LEP site and set the codebreaker working on a password. It took 10 valuable seconds a character, but he was soon flying around LEP microsites. Artemis found what he needed on perp profiles, Mulch Diggum's complete arrest record. From there, it was a simple matter to follow the electron trail back to the original search warrant for Mulch's dwelling. Artemis changed the date on the warrant to read the day after Mulch's arrest. This meant that all subsequent arrests and convictions were null and void. A good lawyer would have him out of prison in a heartbeat. "I have not finished with you yet, Mulch Diggums," he whispered, logging out and clipping the cube back on Holly's belt. Juliet came through the door so fast her limbs were a blur. The jade ring trailed behind her like a fishing lure on the end of a line. Butler would never take chances like this, she knew. He would have some perfectly practical, safe plan, which was why he had his blue diamond tattoo and she didn't. Well, maybe she didn't want a tattoo. Maybe she wanted a life of her own. She quickly assessed the situation. Holly's aim was true. The two gorillas were rubbing their scorched hands, and Spyro was stamping his feet like a spoiled child. Only Blunt was on the floor, going for his gun. Even though the bodyguard was on his hands and knees, he was still almost at her eye level. "Aren't you going to give me a chance to get up?" he asked. "No," said Juliet, whipping the jade ring around like the stone that felled Goliath. It impacted on the bridge of Blunt's nose, cracking it, and effectively blinding him for a couple of minutes. Plenty of time for the Chicago police to get down the shaft. Blunt was now out of the game. Juliet had expected to feel some satisfaction, but all she felt was sadness. There was no joy in violence. Pex and Chips felt they should do something. Perhaps disabling the girl would earn them a bonus from Mr. Spyro. They circled Juliet, fists raised. Juliet wagged a finger at them. "Sorry, boys, you have to go to sleep." The bodyguards ignored her, tightening the radius of their circle. "I said, go to sleep." Still no response. "You have to use exactly the words that I mesmerized them to respond to," said Holly in her ear. Juliet sighed. "If I must." "Okay, gentlemen, Barney says, go to sleep." Pex and Chips were snoring before they hit the ground. That just left Spyro. He was too busy gibbering to be any threat. He was still gibbering when the SWAT team put the cuffs on him. "I'll talk to you back at base," said the captain sternly to Juliet. "You're a danger to your comrades and yourself."
"Yes, sir," said Juliet contritely. "I don't know what came over me, sir."
She glanced upwards. A slight heat haze seemed to be drifting towards the lift shaft. The principal was safe. Holly holstered her weapon, buzzing up her shield.
"Time to go," she said. The volume on her PA turned to minimum.
Holly wrapped the camfoil tightly around Artemis, making certain no limbs were peeking out. It was imperative they leave while the lift was empty. Once forensics and the press got there, even a slight shimmer in the air might be caught on film. As they flew across the room, Spyro was being led from the lab. He had finally managed to calm down.
"This is a setup," he proclaimed in his best innocent voice. "My lawyers are going to rip you guys apart."
Artemis could not resist speaking as they floated past his ear.
"Farewell, John," he whispered.
"Never mess with a boy genius."
Spyro howled at the ceiling like a demented wolf. Mulch was waiting across the street from the phonetics lab, revving the van like a Grand Prix driver. He sat behind the wheel on an orange crate, with a short plank taped to his foot. The other end of the plank was taped to the accelerator. Juliet studied the system nervously.
"Shouldn't you untie that foot in case you need to use the brakes?"
"Brakes?" laughed Mulch. "Why should I use brakes? I'm not doing my driving test here."
In the back of the van, Artemis and Holly simultaneously reached for their seatbelts.